As I mentioned, this is our first class, the kickoff to our ETIM 2023 PESOC Learning Series. This is the first of 15 classes before Seder, so hopefully we can do some things over Chol HaMoed as well. So we're glad we can all be here together. I would like to say that the Pesach series is sponsored by Jeff Weiss in observance of the yahrzeit of his father, Binyamin ben Chaim, zichrono livracha. I'd also like to announce that today's learning, today's Torah in Motion learning, is sponsored by Morris and Doreen Susnovich to commemorate the 82nd yahrzeit of Morris's paternal grandmother, Blima Chaya Bat David, who was murdered in the Holocaust at the age of 62 and is buried in Lodz, Poland. All that being said, I will turn it over to Rabbi Schwartz, and I will post a link also in the chat to Rabbi Schwartz's Mikarot, as well as a link to the Pesach series. So Rabbi Schwartz, I'm going to go ahead and mute all the participants. You will likely have to unmute yourself to get started. Mm-hmm. Thanks everyone for being here. Enjoy.
Okay, everybody can hear me and see me? Okay, great. All right, so thank you so much. It's great to be back with Torah in Motion. My dear friend, Rabbi Kelman, is doing tremendous work, and I'm very pleased to kick off the program. Looks like you have some really great speakers all around, especially after this one. And Binyamin ben Chaim and Blima Chaya Bas David, Eli Neshamos, and may all of our Torah that we share together be a schus for them and their families. Okay, so the first thing that we recognize on Pesach is that we create memories. Everybody here listening probably has some earliest memories of what their Seder was like when they were three or four even. We once had a woman who, in 1985 at our Seder, who remembered pre-Bolshevik Russia and the singing Chag Gadya as a young girl, and then never having a Seder from that year until she went to our house on the west side. But she remembered Chag Gadya. Right? There are stories about how Nebuch children who were sent to live in monasteries during the war at the age of three or four, that when someone sang Manishtana or Chag Gadya, or maybe sang the song about some tune about lighting the menorah, or Shema Yisrael, before going to sleep, that the child remembered, it just sparked something from earlier on, and then they recognized they were Jewish and they were able to be taken to be raised as Jews. So the singing in this brings this out in us, and that's why there's so much of that Hallel Tishbachos that are happening in the Seder. And really it's to create memories. It's really about education. It's about the next generation. It's about creating a continuum. When people ask me how I know that Yitzias Mitzrayim happened, that the stories told at the Seder actually reflect historical events, I tell them I know that those stories happened the same way I know that the Holocaust happened. Because I grew up with someone in my house who experienced the Holocaust and saw it with his own eyes. And he also told me the stories about Yitzias Mitzrayim. So I know about Yitzias Mitzrayim the same way I know about the Holocaust, is that his father told him about Yitzias Mitzrayim all the way back to the years that it took place. And for that reason, I feel that I also stood at Har Sinai, and that is our tradition. And that's what the Seder is all about. It's not just, doesn't end with Yitzias Mitzrayim, doesn't end with the redemption from Egypt. It continues with the entry into the land of Israel. And of course, before then, the receiving of the Torah, and these events are mentioned throughout the Seder, especially the entry into the land and the building of the Beit HaMikdash. Please God, where we will once again soon be able to have the fullness of the Seder with the Korban Pesach. Okay, so along those that reference is the idea, the timeless idea, the pedagogical idea of Chanoch L'Na'ar Al Pi Darko. Is teach the child according to his or her own way and their own, according to their own strengths. And we'll see these little hints at this message is mentioned throughout the Seder, throughout our experiences that are meant to be enhanced during the Seder. And I draw your attention, if you want to just turn to the back of this page, I'm not going to turn to it now because I want to get started with the four sons, is that there is a section of the commentary of Shimshon Rafael Hirsch describing the differences between Yaakov and Esav. These are two twins born from the same parents, raised ostensibly in the same way, and with this very similar DNA. And our sages tell us, until they grew older, they were treated exactly the same. And Shimshon Rafael Hirsch is critical of this. Right? So on the back of the front page here, you can just take a look when you have a chance to, that would be I'll refer to that towards the end of this presentation. For now, we very clearly see that this chart that I gave for you has the four sons in one after the other in the Haggadah, the mentioned Haggadah, which you have in the section to the left are the actual verses in the Torah that produce those four different children. Okay. And then we'll have time. We'll discuss two other rabbinic sources, the Mechilta, which is a Medrash Halacha, a halachic exposition of the book of Shemot. And then finally, the Yerushalmi, the Jerusalem Talmud, the Babylonian Talmud somehow does not have a reference to these four sons, just the Yerushalmi does. So these are four different parts of the same chart. And we start with the section of the Haggadah that refers to these four children. Now, notice that their questions, and yet it says Chacham Mahu Omer. It doesn't say Chacham Mahu Shoel. It says Chacham Mahu Omer. Right? Rasha Mahu Omer. Tam Mahu Omer. And so the first three children are called the wise son, the wicked son, and the simple son. They're saying. But surely they're asking. So I would suggest that the reason why the Haggadah doesn't say Shoel is because in the biblical text, when it comes to one of them, you see the Rasha, it says, V'hayoki yomru aleichem b'nech. He's not really asking. Okay, but with regards to the Chacham, it says, Ki yish'olcha. So for him, we could say, right, Chacham mahu sho'el. You couldn't say mahu sho'el by the Rasha because he's not asking. He's really mocking. Right? Now, with respect to the Tam, it does say v'hayaki yisholcha, but in order to keep all the three boys who ask questions, basically to keep it congruent, the Haggadah just said mahu omer, mahu omer, mahu omer, because they are all saying something, they're just not all asking something. Okay. Now, before I go any further, let me correct something I just did, and I'll confess this is part of the introduction of a Haggadah that I wrote a few years ago called the Four Sons Haggadah. And it distinguishes itself in that everything that's covered in this Haggadah is covered from the standpoint of four different types of children. And I categorized them in a particular way that's a little different than usual. Usually the Chacham and the Rasha are in one framework, and then the Tam and the Shener de Elishol are in another framework. But I think that's wrong. And I think it's wrong to translate the Tam as a simple son. He's not simple. I don't think that Rabbeinu Tam or Yaakov Ish Tam Yoshev Ohalim would want to be thought of as simple. Tam does seem to ask a simple question, Mazos, but we'll get to that shortly. But I prefer to translate him as pure. He's not simple, he's pure. Because if he's simple, then the four boys are categorized in a way that is not parallel, because then it would seem that three of them are categorized by intellectual capacity, wise, unable to ask a question, and simple, and only one by moral capacity, wicked. I would prefer to say that the Tam means pure, and he is the counter to the Rasha. One is wicked and one is pure. And in fact, we wouldn't call him righteous. He's just a kid. But the fact is that in Tanakh, in few pesukim in Mishlei and in Iyov, Gon Gon points this out in his Agada, that Rasha and Tom are used in parallel pesukim, one to contrast the other. The Rasha behaves this way and the Tom behaves that way. So I believe that that's what's happening in the Haggadah. The Chacham and the Sheiner de Lishol are contrast with intellectual capacity, while the Rasha and the Tom are contrast. So let's translate Tom as the pure son. I do not like to call the Rasha wicked. He came to the Seder. He does want to inject some of his thoughts into the process of what's happening at the table. I prefer to call him cynical, is what I call him in my Haggadah. And the Sheiner de Lishol, that's a little too long to keep translating. I call him withdrawn. He's withdrawn. Okay. In the Seder, it would seem that we should translate the Rasha, if not translate, but to understand, he is one who does not want to ask. The Sheiner de Lishol is someone who doesn't know how to ask. The Rasha is someone who doesn't want to ask. He's not asking. He's saying, how do I know? Take a look at the four psukim in the Torah. Okay. The Chacham's question starts off, Ki yisho'olcha in chamachar. Right? When he asks, contrast that with the Rasha who says, Vayaki yomru aleichem. It's not yishalu, it's yomru. Okay? If you turn to the Tom, it's also Ki yisho'olcha. They're asking. Right? Of course, the fourth son, there's no, you don't have that reference because he's not asking at all. Okay, so the Rasha is cynical, but he deserves to be addressed. Okay, so let's start from the beginning and start with the Chacham's question. Okay, so the Chacham is smart because he knows how to categorize. That's that our topic is called taxonomy of questions. Taxonomy means that good teachers should not limit their questions that they ask in class or that they ask on homework or on tests to low-level cognitive thinking. That low-level cognitive thinking is limited to knowledge questions. We can fill an encyclopedia with knowledge questions about the Haggadah. And they're filled with, and usually it's, you know, questions like what do we eat for maror? What, you know, and so usually these low-level questions are very easy to spit back. A student does not have to think much. So if it's a quick-thinking student, they'll get the question very simply. It's often the kind of questions you have to answer to excel in something like Jeopardy. It's a very quick question. You have to fill your mind with a lot of information, which we tend to forget quickly. And that's low-level cognitive thinking. Doesn't mean you don't have to be smart to acquire a lot of knowledge. It's just that it's low level, right? Higher level cognitive thinking is comprehension, right? To comprehend, to take statement A and statement B and comprehend something on a higher level based on comparing those two. Okay. Right. If I said, what phrase keeps repeating in chapter one of Sefer Yehoshua? So a knowledgeable student will say Chazak ve'ematz. Right? Then comprehension might ask, what's the difference between Chazak ve'ematz? Here is where Chazak appears in the Bible. Here is where Ematz appears in the Bible. Look at the two different types of stories and tell me the difference between these two words. Right? That's a comprehension question. Right? Okay, what were the names of Eli's two sons? A quick-thinking student will know, Chafni and Pinchas. But then the way the two of them are described there and in other places might indicate that the two boys were different. And the Talmud says so. Okay, so this is where we contrast knowledge questions and comprehension questions, and therefore if you apply the comprehension, the what we call bina, then we can begin to apply that information to other areas of thought to analyze and synthesize, and therefore get to the highest level of comprehension and cognitive thinking. The rabbi said, "Ezu chacham haroe es hanolad." People who can make predictions, not prophecies, but predictions, likelihood that these facts will lead to draw those conclusions. sometimes scientific conclusions, sometimes mathematical conclusions, sometimes ethical and moral conclusions. But we have to be able to engage our students even from an early age. The Chumash and Rashi and Parshas Noach can be taught on the first two or three levels of cognitive thinking. It should not be left to simple spitback knowledge questions. So if there's a taxonomy of questions, right, there's also a taxonomy of children, because Chanoch Lenar al Pidarko, right? So this child has that taxonomy when he says there are some Eidos at the table, there are some Chukim at the table, and there are some Mishpatim at the table, right? Some of the things we're doing at a Pesach Seder can be classified as Mishpatim. Some can be Eidos. Eidos means their testimonies. The Matz and the Maror give testimony to some of the things we ate at a certain time in history. Not breaking the bones of the Korban Pesach might sound like a chok, something that is not readily understandable. Some of the things we do, like finishing before midnight, or what is the charoset supposed to look like? Some of those are mishpatim; they are handed down by tradition. So the chacham knows enough to identify these different things. He sees them, so he knows how to classify. As opposed to the Rasha, who just says, Maha avodah hazos lachem. What is all this work to you? And while the Torah itself refers to the Korban Pesach as avodah, v'hayaha avodah hazos lachem l'mo'adam yamim yamima, and the Rambam has a section of his Mishnah Torah, the section of avodah, which describes all of the service in the temple. So in and of itself, it is not derogatory to call what we see at the Seder avodah. But when we compare and contrast what the Chacham says, Eidos Chukim Mishpatim, with Avoda, we have this difference. But in fact, in the paragraph of the Rasha, that's not even what we find so wrong with him. It's this word that we find wrong with him. Lachem. What is this work to you? Okay. The work is actually, if you look further down in the Rasha's question, in the Yerushalmi, it says, Maha avoda hazos lachem, maha torech hazeh shatem matrichin aleinu. Yerushalmi captured the essence of that meaning of avoda. It's work, it's labor. It's not something I enjoy. Okay? Amazingly, Rav Aaron Lichtenstein concentrated on the word hazos, maha avoda hazos. He says, you know, I agree that we should try to help downtrodden people, and we should remember their travails, and we should recognize what went wrong and how to help other people who share the same fate. But what's this work? How are we remembering that by eating matzah and maror and having an egg on the plate and having salt water? I want a different dayenu. I want a dayenu with 15 different struggles. I want to enliven my Seder by referring to different civil rights than what we had in our Seder. And while it's definitely true that a lot of how we commemorate Yetzias Mitzrayim, such as the reason why the fair treatment of the stranger is the most commonly repeated mitzvah of the entire Torah, so that a nation that started its very history as strangers should remember the plight of the stranger, no doubt. But the Seder has a specific type of observance. And someone who says, Mazos, I don't like this type of service, I want a different type of service, is behaving like Korach. I know Korach is a part of the Seder, but he's behaving like Korach. Korach agrees with Moshe. Yes, I believe we should have an element of accepting God's majesty and seeing the blueness of the Tchelet, of the Tzitzis that will remind us of God's eminence and the sapphire color of where the crashing sea meets the sky, and we're reminded of God's heavenly throne. But why do I have to do it with tzitzis? I want to do it with a blue hanky. I want to do it with a blue shirt, with a sapphire ring, with a picture of the crashing sea against the sky. I want my own autonomy in determining how to gain God's majesty. Moshe knew he had to come down very hard on that. And he does. And that's why we come down hard on the Russia. Because he has this great peril in saying, Mahavada hazos lachem. By his lights, the Seder would lose its observance within 10, 15 years. Because everything is constantly being changed, reformed, maybe at some point conserved, but it's not, it'll be changed to the point where we wouldn't recognize it. The Seder looks pretty much the same as it did almost 2,000 years ago. Yes, a lot of additions, a lot of changes, but it pretty much looks the same. Whether you say Avodah Gemarinu, Mitchilo of the Avodah Zara, this question, that question, it's pretty much the same after all these years. Because no one thought of changing it like that. Like the Russian who says, Mahabada Hazos. If I had my autonomy, I would change it to be something else. But it's actually not the word Avoda, nor the word Hazos, which the Haggadah concentrates on. It's the word Lochem. What is this to you? Right? Lochem velo lo. He didn't include himself. What should he have said? He should have said, Mahabada Hazos Lanu. What's this work for us? Okay. Because he took himself out of the grouping. Oh, by just saying Lochem, he took himself out of the grouping. Wait a second. We look at the Chacham's question, right? It's further up. He says, Ma'ay dos Chachmim Mishpatim Asher Tzivah Hashem Elkeinu Eschem. He also said Eschem. Right? He should have said Osanim. So why does he get a pass for saying Eschem? So first of all, take a look at the Yerushalmi and the Mechilta. The Yerushalmi changes his question to Osanim. See it? The Mechilta does. The Yerushalmi does as well. The Mefarshim to both these sources say that, look how smart he is. He knows to change the Masoretic text to Osanim. A fascinating thing, by the way, that the Septuagint, you've all heard of the Septuagint, the translation of the Torah by 70 wise men. The translation, the Greek translation of the Septuagint actually also reads Osanim. It means that whoever chose to change the Masoretic text must have been aware of the Haggadah. Because there's nothing wrong with saying Eschem unless you are juxtaposing Eschem, right, of the Chacham to what the Haggadah finds so wrong in the Lochem of the Russia. Okay? But I have some answers to this question. The fact is that the Chacham does say Asher Tzivah Hashem Elokeinu. He does include himself, the Lord our God. Right? Plus, since he says that the Lord our God has commanded, right? If he's before Bar Mitzvah, he can't say has commanded us. Because a pre-Bar Mitzvah boy is not commanded. Right? So if he's 11 or 12, he can't say Asher Tzivah Hashem Elokeinu Osanu. So the fact that he says Tzivah, and the fact that he includes God as the one who gave us this command, so he gets away with saying Eschem. Okay. Incidentally, David Tzvi Hoffman in his commentary to the Torah says, if you look at the pasuk in the Torah, it starts off in singular, Ki Yishulcha Bincha Machar, and then it ends Asher Tzivah Hashem Elokeinu, because that's plural, Eschem. He's turning to his parents and he says, Eschem, you in plural. So, however you look at it, it's a problem that starts in singular and goes to plural. But David Tzvi Hoffman says that in pshat, in the simple meaning of the pasuk, the word Eschem is not part of the boy's question. The boy's question ends with the word Elokeinu. Take a look at the pasuk. Eschem is part of Moshe's words to the kid's parent, to the parents. These are Moshe's words. Ki yishulcha bincha machar lemor Eschem. When your children tomorrow ask of you, right? It's a good way to read the pasuk. Right? Rashi, it's called Sirus HaMikra, where you read three statements, A, C, and then come back to B. Your children say to you, saying, and this is the quote that ends with the word Elokeinu, not with Eschem. Right? So we don't have to question why does the Chacham get away with saying Eschem. But I gave some explanations. Plus, there's another interesting thing, is that there's a euphemism in the Talmud. When the Talmud does not want to say God, it says the word Atzmo. Take a look. Atzmo is a euphemism for God. And I'll give one example. When Titus broke through to the Holy of Holies, and it says that he pierced the Baruchas, what does it say in the Gemara in Gittin that happened? Well, the sprinkling of the blood for hundreds of years and blood congealed, but then he ripped it up and blood started to spurt out of the curtain. And the Gemara says, V'choshav sheharag et atzmo. Right? It's a euphemism. The Gemara does not want to say the words, he thought he killed. You know, don't want to say those words at one point. Right? So it says, he thought he killed himself. So atzmo is a euphemism for God. And therefore, now if we read that into the Haggadah, it says, Ulefi shehutzi et atzmo min haklal, ofar beikar, because he took God out of the equation. How do we know he took God out of the equation? Because he doesn't mention God like the first boy does. He didn't mention God. That's another thing we find wrong with him. One, he calls everything at the table avoda. Two, he says zos. He wants to commemorate with something else. He wants to change the seder. He wants to put an orange on the seder plate instead of an egg. He wants to put pineapple there. He wants to put his own colorful things and make his own way across the seder. And then he says lochem, he doesn't include himself, but also he doesn't mention God the way the Chacham did. Okay? He may be in support of civil rights and freedom for slaves as much as anybody, but he doesn't think it's a godly thing necessarily because he's mentioned God. So that's how he is kofar b'ikar. Otherwise, you might want to ask, I remember learning in the Talmud, in Chulin Daf Hei, that only two violations are considered a violation of the entire Torah, kofar b'ikar. Violation of Shabbos and idolatry. But I never heard that mocking what's happening at the Seder is considered a violation of the whole Torah, kofar b'ikar. So the answer is, it may just be, okay, it may just be that Yetzias Mitzrayim is the essence of belief in God. And hopefully I'm going to come back to that at the end to wrap things up. Okay? All right, so we see the paramount differences between the Chacham and the Rasha, but I'd like to turn with me, please, to the second column, to the Torah column, where some interesting contrasts come forth. Notice that in the first child, the Chacham, he is Shochab bin Cha in singular. The Rasha, v'yakyam ro'lechem b'neichem, he's in plural, right? The next child, ki yishochab bin cha, singular. Next child, igadata levin cha, your son. You see, there's a trend happening here that the Haggadah may want to point out to us, is that parents must treat children as individuals. Do not throw your children in a box. Do not compare this child with another child. They have different experiences. They have different, even two twins like Yaakov and Esav, right? I'm turning the page to the other side. Now, maybe now it's a good time to read, okay, see it there? So now I'm reading this section here. See, the lads grew up. Our sages never hesitate to point out to us the errors and shortcomings, both great and small, of our ancestors. His objection here is that he thinks that Yitzchak and Rivka made a mistake in treating Yaakov and Esav exactly the same until they grew up, at which time Esav turned to Nimrod and to be a hunter, and Yaakov turned to the tents of Shem and Aver. So he objects to this and is critical of these differences between Yaakov and Esav. He says that Yitzchak and Rivka should have tasked themselves better with recognizing the inherent differences between the two. Okay, take a look. For this reason, right, each individual must be raised for the same lofty purpose, right, but in accordance with his own way. That's how I started this year. Noch l'nar al-pi darko. In keeping with the path of life to which his personal tendencies may be expected to lead him. To attempt to educate a Jacob and an Esav together in the same classroom, in the same routines of life, and in the same manner, as I'll say that that's how they were treated until they were 15. To raise both of them for, say, a life of study and contemplation will inevitably mean to ruin one of the two. I think that might be an objection to the way every single person gets to learn in Kollel. Some people maybe aren't fit for Kollel, right? Some people need to work with their hands and better suited for that and would prefer it. Right? Of course, Torah study is important every day of our lives until we leave this earth. But to do only that is only really maybe for a choice few. Right? Okay, so under such conditions, a Jacob type will learn to draw with ever-growing zeal from the well of wisdom and truth. But an Esav type will hardly be able to wait for the day when he can throw away his ancient schoolbooks. At that time, he will turn his back not only to his schoolbooks, but also to his life's purpose, which he has been taught only in a one-sided way that has no appeal whatever to his temperament. Amazing. This is Shimshon HaFarosh writing in Germany in about 1840, 1850. Right, as many Jews were preferring Esav's life to Yaakov's life. Isaac and Rebekah studied Esav's nature and asked themselves at an early stage how even an Esav with the strength, skills, and courage latent within him could be won for endeavors in the service of God so that the future Gibor would not become a Gibor Tzayin, Nimrod, we'd say, but truly a Gibor Lifnei Hashem. And Jacob and Esav, despite the basic differences in their tendencies, could have remained twin brothers in spirit as well as in flesh. In that case, the sword of Esav could have become welded, wedded, but I think it was supposed to be welded early on, the spirit of Jacob, and who knows what a different turn of all history would have taken. Right? Okay, it's just really the essence of dividing these boys into these categories. Some say that the four boys are actually every one of us. We all start off as Sheinar De'Elisha, very curious. We open our eyes wide to see colors and sizes and shapes, and we start to recognize faces, and we recognize scents and sounds, and we start to recognize words, and we replicate those words. And then we get to be two or three, and we point to everything. We say, Mazos, Mazos, what's that? What's that? What's that? And then we turn to a rebellious stage when we get to be 12, 13, 14, and we all run into that stage. The Chavetz Chaim did, and so did everybody else. And until we hopefully reach the Chacham stage, and it's really all of us. The Friedricher Rebbe, the Rebbe before the last of Avitcher Rebbe, said that the four boys were actually four generations. First, the generation that came to America from Europe were Chachamim. They were mostly Torah observant, but their children quickly did not like what they saw here, did not have good expectations here. They were not met. The streets were not paved in gold, and they quickly broke the yoke of what they remembered from the old town. And that was the generation of Russia that turned cynical against the halacha. And their children, they sent to Hebrew school a little bit, Tom. They simply knew just to ask her a few questions about Judaism. And then the fourth generation, Sheinar De'Elishol, that didn't even know how to ask at all. There's another generation after that, which are Balei Tshuva, which are turning back to the earlier generations of finding their way. So these four are really all of us in some way, and what's interesting is that for the Chacham and the Rasha, they both get an answer in the Haggadah that begins with the word Af. The Af ata emorlo kilchos haPesach. And here we say, but Rasha the Af ata keishinav. These two answers are not anywhere near the answers the Torah gives to them. In fact, the answer the Torah gives to these two boys is in the Haggadah. And the answer to the Chacham's question is Avodim Hayinu Lefarah B'Mitzrayim, that whole big paragraph. Right? The answer that we give to the Rosh's question, Amartem Zevach Pesach, it's fascinating. That's the answer we give later in the Haggadah to Pesach Shenu Bochayu Ochlim Avoseinu Al Shuma. Exactly those words. There's a lesson here. Right? In the Haggadah, we give the Chacham a very elaborate answer. Doesn't seem to make sense on the face of it, because it seems that the version of the Haggadah has gotten mixed up. It says Afata Emorlo Kehilchos HaPesach. The original version of the Haggadah read Afata Emorlo Kol Hilchos HaPesach. That's the Ritva's version. Teach him all the laws of Pesach Ad Ein Maftir Nachar Pesach Apikoman. That's how the last Mishnah in Maseches Pesachim begins. Right, essentially. You answer the Chacham's question, teach him Maseches Pesachim. Teach him the laws of Pesach. Teach him the halacha. Right? That's what this means. There are other drushas about Kehilchos HaPesach means that the taste of the matzah should be on your breath. You don't need anything else, because the whole essence of the holiday is to remember the relationship you have with the matzah. That can be understood on a number of levels. One, that I'm actually acting out the elements of what my ancestors did. All studies show that when we act things out, we remember them better. This is why it's important, let's say, even in to remember the Holocaust, where children can be given, they're given in the schools, they give them a yellow star to wear for the day, or they actually act out, they have plays, they do things. I know Spanish-Portuguese synagogue on Tisha B'Av, they have a play about the Geirut Sfarad, you know, about the Inquisition and the expulsion. So when you act things out, it helps us remember things to a much greater extent. So that's Kehilchos HaPesach. Let him know that it's not only about the halachos. It's all tonight. It's really a lot of it is about how we feel. It's sensational. A lot of senses, taste, and experiences. This is what the mortar looked like. This is what the food they ate looked like. This is their sweat. This is their tears. This is the food they ate. Right. So this is really a masterpiece of pedagogy. All right. But why does it say af? So here, I'm just a very simple suggestion is that, of course, we're supposed to give the Torah's answer to him, his question, to the Chacham's question, and the Torah's answer to the Rosh's question. Ba'af means afilu. In addition to that, tell him this answer. Why doesn't it say af by the other two children? If you look at the Torah Pesukim, the answer is obvious. Because the Torah's answer to these two boys is the same as the Haggadah's answer to these two boys. Okay. The proof of this is that in the Yushalmi seems to contradict what I said before about the tongue. Here it calls him Tipesh. Tipesh is what we normally say today is translated as stupid. I would disagree. I think Tipesh means a child who is contemplative and slow. The word tipesh appears in the Bible, but it doesn't mean someone who is disabled in his mindset. It means someone who is deliberative and slow in his mindset. Right? It means he takes his time to answer a question. Right? So the proof of what I just said about Af is that the tipesh's answer, amazingly, Nimshami, is the Chacham's answer in the Seder, in the Haggadah. It says, teach the Tipesh all of Maseches Pesachim. See? Afatar. Seder Hachos Pesach She'in Maftir Nechar Pesach HaPikomen. Right? Obviously, he's not a Tipesh. He's not mentally disabled. Otherwise, we wouldn't be able to teach him Maseches Pesachim. He's slow and contemplative. Right? Okay, so that we feel that we can teach him Maseches Pesachim. So that's why it says af here, see? Because he's not getting the answer of the Torah, according to the Yerushalmi. Who is? Look at the Chacham's question. So it says, af ato emor lo b'chozik elo tzeno Hashem mitzrayim b'beis avadim. This is the Tom's answer in the Torah. He's not getting the answer he gets, so you have to give him his answer, the Devarim, and give him this answer also. Okay? So whoever doesn't get the answer the Torah gives, the source is going to say af. Okay? Af meaning, in addition to what the Torah tells us to tell him this as well. Now, if you look at the back of this second page, I give you the 10 places in the Bible where someone says the words mazos. And it's usually mazos asisa, mazos asisa, mazos asisa, mazos aso, asinu, asinu. Everyone, look, every single one. All 10. This is it. Mazos means, what did you do? He's the only time in the whole Bible where it just says the word mazos with another word afterwards. May I suggest to you, he's a pure kid. He loves what he sees. He has wonderment. Mazos. He's so amazed by what he sees. I have a contrast. Moshe and Bilam both saw an animal doing something that was out of the ordinary. In the case of Moshe, he saw a snake turn to a stick. In the case of Bilam, he saw a donkey speak. But they both had profoundly different reactions to those. When Moshe saw a snake turn to a stick, it says, Vayonas. He jumped. Oh, what is that? But Moshe has a sense of wonderment. When Bilam heard the donkey start to talk, he didn't say, whoa, a talking donkey. What's that? No, he just talked back. Bilam is, poor Bilam. No wonderment in Bilam. I might say that may be what the Manishtana is. Manishtana halayla is amikolo. So how wonderful, how amazing is this night different than all other nights? Right? So this might further explain why I might think that he is a pure child. Back to the Russia for a second. In my Haggadah, I do not call him wicked. There's no such thing as a wicked son who shows up at the Seder. He may be cynical. We might have to refer, talk to him with a stern, even harsh response. But I did not refer to him as wicked. I referred to him as cynical. Okay? He's cynical. And the proof I brought in my Haggadah is that when it says that Shaul, King Saul, caused all kinds of grief to the Philistines. Could have maybe said the same thing about Shimshon, but it only says it by it says Kol Asher Yifne Yarshia. And wherever Shaul turned to the Philistines, he did rishus to them. He did rasha. Now, no one would say that means he was a rasha to the Philistines. No, in most English translations, it says he caused mischief. This is a mischievous kid. He's like, you have to treat him properly. I'll tell you one of the greatest Bali Musar of the 20th century. If you were in the Miri Yeshiva, you wouldn't take 2 seconds to know who I'm talking about. As I describe him, tell me. But my grandfather was his Harusa in Stuchin. My grandfather told me that there were so many occasions where this kid was very nearly expelled from the Yeshiva. He was the most mischievous kid. He did the craziest things in Shir. And my grandfather was 2 years older than him and called upon to rein him in and keep him. My grandfather married one of the Rosh Yeshiva's daughters and moved to America. And he stayed in the Yeshiva and went to Eretz Yisrael. The person I'm talking about was one of the greatest Bali Musar. He wrote so many Musar Sfarim, and he was the Mashkiach Ruchani, and he was the Bal Musar at the Miri Yeshiva for close to half a century. His name was Chaim Shmulevitz. Everyone has heard of the name. He was a real chevroman. He knew the students because he was them. He remembered what it was like. And he often writes in his writings, he's amazingly, he's critical of Yehoshua ben Prachya. Remember who he is? Who did Yehoshua ben Prachya turn away, turn aside? That the Gemara says, Jesus, Yeshua, in a censored text in the Sechas Sanhedrin. And he's critical of Yehoshua ben Prachya because he said, By the grace of God, I was just a step away of being a real oisvorf if they didn't have some more patience for me. Right? I have a footnote in my Haggadah about a question that they asked the Chazon Ish. They asked him, someone asked him, he said, I have 200 students and 198 of them are great. They do exactly as they're told. And there are two that are really mischievous. They're constantly causing trouble. And I want permission from you, Rebbe, to expel them. So Chazon Ish, this is a story told to me by Reb Kahaneman in Ponovich, is that the Chazon Ish said, I don't get it. You have 200 students and you want to expel the only two who actually need you? And now, I suspect that there is a threshold whereby a student goes too far, and I'm sure that it's so. But you see what we're saying here. There's no, we call him a Rasha. Maybe because I piled on him before with the Zos and the Avoda and the Lachem, and he kept God's name out of it, and he contrast with the Chacham. But the fact is, he showed up at the Seder. He's there. He's asking the question, right? So therefore, I prefer to call him cynical, and even the most cynical among us deserve answers. Okay. All right. So we have this additional interesting concept that the Rasha and the Sheinoi de Elishol get the same answer. Right? In the Haggadah, the answer is the Sheinoi de Elishol. Right? But the Haggadah means to stress two different words for them. Obviously, the word stressed for the Rasha is Li. Bavoy ze asa sham Li, but say Simi Mitzrayim. I'm included, right? And what was stressed for the Sheinoi de Elishol is Bavur Zeh. Bavur Zeh. Make sure that there's a lot of devices that you can use at the Seder in order to make sure that everybody, like the Gemara says, keep doing this, this, so that the children ask questions. Well, be creative. Well, just don't just rely on what the Haggadah says to ask questions. Have your own questions ready. Okay. So I happen to be teaching 7th and 8th grade at Manhattan Day School now, and they have us do Haggadah for 2 or 3 weeks before Pesach. And I gave them an assignment of 25 questions, and they are, just a mixture of all kinds of cognitive thinking kinds of questions. Right? For the paragraphs and why sometimes the Haggadah seems to give us too much information or more information than we actually need. Why does it say where these 5 rabbis were dining? B'nai Brak. Who cares? What does B'nai Brak have to do with it? So we read the Haggadah. There's been so many Perushim to the Haggadah. The Haggadah is the most commonly commented Jewish text of all time. Right? There are something like 4,000 different commentaries to the Haggadah. I don't think there are 4,000 different commentaries to the Chumash. Right? Therefore, the Haggadah is expounded to the kind of extent that the Chumash is expounded. If you're going to tell me where the Seder was, that must be significant. Right? And you'll find Haggadahs that give you 10 different significances about the fact that that story was in B'nai Brak. Okay? Why isn't Rabban Gamliel dining with them? Those rabbis are always with Rabban Gamliel. Where was he? And then the Haggadah starts to become alive as an historical text. We begin to compare the way questions are asked in the Haggadah with the way questions were asked then at that time. Even amongst the Romans and amongst the Jews writing these kind of texts. Okay. So it becomes alive. It becomes new because there are always new Haggadahs. That come out each and every year. I know some people that like to get a new Haggadah or their family gets them a new Haggadah every year. All right. I would like to move towards conclusion here with, explaining two very difficult terms. One is where we take the Rosh and we say, af atah hakei et shinav. Akechina, which means something like clench his teeth. Right? So there are many different interpretations of this involving gematrias, involving all kinds of interpretations, but I need to really interpret it with the way that it appears in the Bible. Okay? The words appear in Sefer Yechezkel chapter 18, also in Yirmiyahu chapter 33, and it says that no longer will people say that God is not fair, because people think God isn't fair. Because the parents eat rotten grapes, and the children's teeth rot as a result. Vishine bonim tikena. So when we say afato hakhei et shinov, you have to appeal to the sense of fairness of this kid. This kid may be cynical, but he came there asking questions, and he has a sense of righteousness. He has a sense of he came to try to celebrate with those who are downtrodden, right? And to commemorate their plight. Appeal to his sense of fairness. That's what Yechezkel Yudches is actually all about. Is God fair? Right? So keeping that in mind, it's also important to look at this pasuk here in Tehillim, Kichitzim b'yad gibor kein b'nei hanurim, is that children are likened unto a bow and arrow, a shot arrow. Because the closer you hold the bow to your heart, the further that arrow is going to go. But as soon as you let go of that arrow, it's given to fickle winds. There might be something that prevents it from reaching the target you're trying to shoot it towards which you're trying to shoot it. So the So this is by way of understanding what we're trying to do to give this Russia a fair chance at turning things around. Okay. And then it's important also to point out that at the responses the Haggadah gives to the four children, it says that with regards to the Chacham, it says, Af ato emor lo kel hosarasa. Ta emor lo, you, says to the father, masculine. Russia, it says, Af ato hakeet shinom, says it masculine. Tom, the omarta, marta is masculine. It was a woman who would say about mart. But when it comes to the Shenoy de Lishol, it's at. Now, at could be the Aramaic second person masculine because it says sach, not pischi. It's because of this word that some of the programs in some high schools especially, and even YU has the program where for students who need to catch up, they call it the Petach program because of this pasuk, at Petachlo. So, but here, the withdrawn child, the Haggadah gives advice for the mother to turn out to him. So I would like to suggest an important point. Earlier, about a half hour ago, I mentioned the Friedricher Rebbe's explanation of the Haggadah referring to the four children, referring to four generations of Jews that came to America. And after the Holocaust, the Jewish community, I would say that the observant Jewish community in America was reeling. They were given a boost by some Jews who came over from Europe, the Sheves HaPleta. But the Jewish community was, the firm Jewish community was really reeling to the point that the 1950 American Jewish Yearbook, I should say the now defunct American Jewish Yearbook, predicted that by the year 2000, there will be no Orthodox Jews in the United States. They will either no longer want to be Orthodox or they'll move to Israel. So what could make in 1950 an American Jewish Yearbook, which is responsible for chronicling all the major events concerning the Jews around the world, but especially in the U.S., to make such a bold prediction. And they explain. They say the Holocaust has damaged their faith, and this is where the world has gone. The conservative movement was ascending. They were 1 year away from a psak halacha that said better to drive to shul than to not to go to shul when you move out to the suburbs, which is what sociologists within the conservative movement today claim is what brought them to this state that they're in now of non-observance. But what happened in 1950 is that there was a revolution going on in the Torah world. That revolution was a clear decision that was made some years earlier in some circles, but was only then beginning to take fruit and to take root, was the essential need the Jewish community felt to educate girls exactly the same way that we educate boys in their early years, certainly from first grade through 12th grade, to open up as many yeshivas for girls as there are for boys. Right? My mother was the oldest of six sisters. The older three did not have yeshivas. The younger three did. So there was Yeshiva Soloveitchik where I went to. That was already open in the mid-40s. And Breuers, and there were schools that decided girls have to learn Torah as much as boys. Until then, girls were learning Tzenarena, a little bit here, a little Chimish. So, and even in the most Hasidic circles, girls are learning, and I must tell you, because I have granddaughters in Israel, a lot of them, they are learning incredible material in fifth grade, seventh grade, 10th grade. Incredible material, incredible amount of material. More than you can imagine here, right? So in the frumest of circles, the frumest of Hasidic circles, they know girls have to learn. So that I would suggest to you that when it says At Pesachlo, that the generation of Jews at the time of the mid 20th century in America was very withdrawn. You were like Shenoyer de Elishon. You didn't know how to ask. It was so, so tarnished and so, so dismayed by the Holocaust and its aftermath. Even though we were by 1950, we had the State of Israel, but we were in such a withdrawn state. What could take us out so that what amazing promise of what the Torah world is today in all areas is because I would submit to you, and that's how I actually close my Haggadah, is that at Pesachlo, it's that the withdrawn Jewish community was turned around because of the chashivos of teaching girls Torah and then raising a whole different element of the way they would raise their families. So that I take to you is why the Haggadah feminizes the response to the Shenir de Elisha. Now, in today's time, I see even when my daughter lives in Givat Zeva Chadasha, I see a lot of the traditional roles for men and women are shared. The men taking all the kids to school, women are, very famously helping out with the parnasa and the family and working. And it's you see a lot of the shared roles that seem to come out for men and women from the Garden of Eden that are understandably some we can't share, but some we can. And the more that we share the traditional role of education until, the early to mid part of the 20th century was only for boys, right? But now we consider this to be, of paramount importance. And that seems to me to fulfill a biblical prophecy. Yirmiyahu, chapter 31 in his prophecy of return, says that just before the exile ends, just before our redemption, you will recognize a new thing in the land. He calls it Nekeva Tisovev Gaver. Rashi says that means that the Nekeva, like in Shir HaShirim, the woman is going to have to run after the man. Right? So that's Rashi's interpretation. God's not going to send us any more prophets before Mashiach comes. We're going to have to search for him. Right? In a Pashat Pshat sense, Yirmiyahu had said that we're not going to want to get married because things are going to get so bad. That's why he said, Od Yishama Ba'ari Yehuda. We'll want to get married again so that at weddings, a woman literally circles the groom in order to willy-nilly fulfill this prophecy. Malbim says that it means the Keva Tesovav Gavar means the land, which is feminine in Hebrew, will search out for the people. He wrote this in the 1860s, connecting it to the fact that the Persians allowed us to return to Israel without fighting a war. And he said, I hope that when we return to Israel soon, we will be recognized by the Gentiles of the world and not have to fight a war to return. So I would like to just say an elementary understanding of what Yirmiyahu is saying is that just before our redemption, the women will take their prominent place in Torah roles, in educational roles. They'll be leading schools. They'll be heads of schools. And they'll be taking their place so that at Pesach, that the woman will be able to open up and take withdrawn children, Shenor de'Elisha, and make them chachonim, make them pure and make them knowledgeable. And that's really where we stand today. It's a good place. And I'd like to thank all of you for being here for this first of many Torah in Motion programs. Again, I would like to extend an Yilu Neshama to Binyamin Ben Chaim and to Blima Chaya Bas David. And Shira, I thank you for setting all this up. And I hope everyone can use these sources. They're all here for you across the board for comparison and make your own taxonomy at the Seder, and remember to treat everybody as individuals and give them exactly the kind of questions they need and the kind of responses they need.
Beautiful. Yasher Koach, thank you so much, Rabbi Schwartz. I do see one question in the chat from Ellie Strauss. I don't know if Ellie, would you like me to read it? Would you like to ask the question to Rabbi Schwartz before we finish up? Do you have a couple minutes if there are questions, Rabbi Schwartz?
Where does Rabbi David C. Hoffman say these things? I'm intrigued because I have been planning to translate at least some of his Sfarim, which appeared in German and have not been translated. So I have the Perush in my office. It's his commentary to Devarim chapter 6, verse 20. Take a look if you have it. Devarim chapter 6, verse 20 where he says that Eschem is Moshe's words to the parents, not the child's words to his parents. And it's Moshe's words. Moshe's quote is, Yishochab im chamachol emor eschem, and your children tomorrow ask of you, maha edus fulgum shvit mitzvot chatzim ha'kim. So we don't have to ask, why does the Chacham get a pass for saying eschem? He never said eschem. Okay. So, I'd like to publicly thank my executive director, Chad Opkovitz, for all of his assistance on this end, and thank all of you for, if you want to ask me any questions on my own personal email, I think he just sent it to you.
And one more person asked, yep, your email address is now posted in the chat, and someone else asked where they can purchase your Haggadah.
Oh my goodness. At our shul, I guess. Oh, it's on Amazon?
I just found it on Amazon. Thank you so much. I just posted the link. Brilliant lecture.
Great. Amazon sometimes runs incredible sales on it. Sometimes for a couple of hours, they'll say, you know, for the next 2 hours, you can get it for $2.99 or something. I see it sometimes. So,
one of our other participants just ordered it already. So, thank you so much, Rabbi Schwartz. Thank you to everyone for being here. I look forward to seeing you at more of our Pesach classes. And Chodesh Tov,
could you repeat the email address, please?
Sure. I'll post it again, or would you like me to say it out loud for you? Okay, I'm posting it in the chat, and I'll read it out loud as well. It's ras@ozny.org. And if you missed it, you can always email me at Torah in Motion. That's info@torahinmotion.org. And now that I know it's okay to share Rabbi Schwartz's email address, I can give it to you that way as well.
Thank you.
Sure. Please send my regards to Rabbi Kelman.
I certainly will. All the best.
Okay.
Chag Sameach. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Chag Sameach.